Welcome back to Numbers on the Board.
Numbers on the Board, yes! Welcome back. We are here today without our guy, King of the Fourth Quarter, Kenny Beecham. He is right now in New York handling business on First Take. We just got a quick little round of applause for KB. We was able to watch him before the show started. KB, we saw you doing your thing.
Up there chopping it up with Shannon and Stephen A.
Yeah.
Definitely doing his thing.
Yeah, he looked comfortable. Yeah, I was proud to see him. Yeah.
I don't like what he was saying about my Lakers, but it was kind of facts, though. It was kind of facts. It needed to be said.
The truth always hurts. I was waiting for him to say something about the Knicks. He kept it real. But it was good to see KB out there. Also, be sure, when you're watching this, whenever time it is, tune in, 1 o'clock, what is it, Central, 2 o'clock Eastern. We're going to be on ESPN2. Numbers on the Board debut on ESPN2, 2 o'clock Eastern. Make sure you tune into that. DVR it, record it. And like I said last week, if you're watching it, take a picture, screenshot, blast it all over social media, tag us. Let's get this retweeted and plastered all over the place. It's a really big deal and a nice little debut for us on TV. How y'all feeling, though, man? It's kind of surreal.
Yeah, you know it's kind of, it's exciting. Like, I've never envisioned myself ever being on TV. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew it was a chance, like, being in this space, but, like, it's kind of surreal when everything comes into fruition and you're like, damn, this is actually happening. Like, I'm going to be on TV. But it was just fun to even, like, record it last night and everything. It was amazing just being with y'all. We watched the Knicks game and the Lakers game. And we got to react to them live, like, fresh. Everything's, like, fresh in your memory.
For sure.
So I think that was amazing.
Yeah, it was good. I don't think it really hit me until I was kind of, like, driving home and everything. And ultimately, I felt like it was just the beginning. You know, I feel like we've done so much, but we still got so much more to go. I know we've been accomplishing a lot, but it really just feels, again, like the beginning. So that's always a good feeling.
No, for sure. I feel you on that. Like, I know it's a big deal because it's something that we watched growing up all of our lives, ESPN. It's still surreal that we can say we with ESPN and be a part of the family, but then let alone actually, like this morning, we were just here, we was watching KB on ESPN, and I pulled out my phone, and you can go to the TV schedule, and like, it says Numbers on the Board, and you can, like, add it to your favorite, and, like, get a reminder whenever the show is coming on again, and record it, just to be able to experience that, and know where we came from, how we started, is very surreal. I don't think it's gonna hit me until I'm literally on my couch, and I can turn on the TV and see myself and to see the reaction of everybody. Because we got a lot of day ones who've been here since we was in KB apartment.
Man, I was getting DMs this morning saying, good luck and everything like that. So you already know the support is there before it even drops.
Yeah, my mom texted me tomorrow, what time are you going to be on TV again? Like, she want to know exactly what time, what's the name, and everything. She want to know. She want to be locked in.
Yeah, this is crazy, man. Just to think about where we came from. You got to drop the mic today, though?
No, not today.
No drop the mic today? That Lakers loss, was that depressing?
You know, we had a long night. Had to get my rest. Had to be back here in the morning. I said, I was telling KB this, for our kind of new schedule, we got that closed opening shift.
Yes, we do. We closed last night, and now we are here to open for sure. Let's dive right into it then. Since you don't have a drop of mic, let's make your drop the mic about the Lakers. We're going to give you the floor.
Okay.
Say everything you need to say, however you feel. You got any wild takes? Do you still believe y'all going to win? Whatever you want to do with this time, the floor is yours, my brother. Go ahead. If you want to vent, we're here as your therapist.
Yeah. Yes, or last night specifically felt like that was the game we needed. I feel like to stay alive in this series. The Nuggets have had our number for, like, it seemed like the last 2-3 years, it seems like, especially after the playoff.
I think it's going on 9 games.
No, it's 10 games. 10 9 games? With LeBron.
Oh, yes. 10, yes, because y'all did lose.
It's just we had so many things, I think, go right, especially in the first half, that were positive, like the Anthony Davis game. That was there. Second half, it's a little different. D-Lo hitting his shots, that was there. LeBron doing his thing in the fourth. Like, we had so many things that I think you would think would end in a win. And the Nuggets still said, nah, we're the better team. You know, we're going to fight down the stretch. We're going to hit the big shots. Shout out to MPJ, KCP with the nasty dunk. Like, they make plays that are going to win the game. And ultimately, Jamal Murray, who struggled all game.
Yes.
Until literally the fourth quarter, it's like, it was just like a movie for them.
For sure. Know? I think y'all beat yourselves a lot.
Like, I can't take the dry spells. How do we go 5 minutes without a basket?
Yes, especially when Anthony Davis is having that type of a game. He had 32. I felt like in that fourth quarter, he really wasn't that impactful.
He wasn't.
On the defensive side or on the offensive side of the ball.
No, and then he had checked out at the end of the third, and they were like, during the fourth, he was on the bench. Like, the start of the fourth, he was on the bench.
They were trying to preserve him because he had those 12 fouls.
And when he had came back in, I was expecting the difference, right, mm-hmm. from when we had Rui trying to guard Jokic or from Jackson Hayes trying to play out there. I thought the difference was going to come back. Nothing.
They let that man get a rhythm being guarded by Rui.
What? How many points do y'all think Anthony Davis scored in the fourth?
Four.
Probably two.
Score zero.
Yeah, see.
How many shot attempts do you think Anthony Davis had in the fourth quarter?
Three.
Five.
One.
I remember that one when Aaron Gordon walled
him up.
Yeah. That was his only shot attempt?
Yeah, he went 0-1 in his quarter. This was the fourth quarter was really the LeBron James show as far as the Lakers go. Rui with 0-1. Anthony Davis 0-1. Reeves 1-2. D'Angelo Russell 1-2. And LeBron had the 12 points. So they had 20 points in this quarter. LeBron had 12. The second highest score in this quarter is Torian Prince with 3.
And that was a step back 3 that was like a miraculous shot.
You know what's crazy? He hit it again later on in that quarter. He tried to hit it from the left wing, and it didn't even hit the rim. And I'm just like, the first one was fool's goal. And he thought he could do that shit again.
And then you look at the flip side, and Jamal Murray's best quarter is the fourth quarter, where you look at LeBron. The way I look at it was Jokic started slow this game, and Anthony Davis came out of the gate firing.
Yep.
Jamal Murray came out aggressive, but he just wasn't making shots. LeBron was kind of in that first half more so controlling the game.
Facilitating.
D'Angelo Russell was getting hot and making shots, which was really big for y'all. And then you see in the second half, Anthony Davis' aggression goes down from a shot attempts perspective, from the scoring perspective. It just drops big time. And then some of the shot making from D'Angelo Russell that you was getting in that first half, it took a big fall off. And then LeBron tried to gear up. But it's going to be hard for the Lakers because you're competing against a duo. So your duo is going to not only have to sustain it, but sometimes outwork them. And then also, they have this best supporting cast, I think, in the NBA, not even from a skill or talent perspective, but from a fit. The way that Michael Porter Jr. fits Jamal Murray and Jokic two-man game as a floor spacer, a jumbo floor spacer, KCP can play off of it, and then you also have Aaron Gordon as a cutter and an interior threat, you kind of have a defense on edge all game long, especially mm-hmm. in the fourth quarter when they get to operate. And Jamal Murray had 14 points in this quarter. Jokic had 7, 5, and 4, and everything is just operating on all cylinders, and I think they had a complete team effort. Jokic had a 20-20 triple-double. Jamal Murray hit the game-winning shot. But we all watched last night. We saw every single player in that starting lineup make an impactful play.
I think that's the difference with Jokic and why he's so hard to stop is because naturally his game just gets people involved. And you can say the same thing about LeBron, but it's just so different from that center spot because you're so close to the basket. And you seen, like, the footwork was amazing last night, too. Mm-hmm. You know, he was putting on post moves, and I think that when you have the ability to have variety in your shots down the stretch, your chances of winning are so much better than just a straight up, hey, LeBron, get the mismatch and go.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing if it's one-on-one, but there's so many eyes on you. There's help coming. There's all this. You got rotations. For Jokic, it's just so second nature because it's like, I don't know. It's just something different about Jokic, the way he thinks.
He had a double-double in the first quarter, double-double in the first half. I'll tell y'all this. Nikola Jokic was 1, 2, 3, 4. He was fourth in shot attempts in the first half for the Nuggets. Fourth in shot attempts. No, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. He was fifth. Christian Brown shot more shots than him in the first half. Mm. Really letting the game come to him.
We seen the first half, LeBron was kind of beating the Nuggets with the playmaking, and then he came down the stretch and kind of went the other way with the Nuggets. But the Nuggets, they just keep making – they make sure that they're known that they're still the defending champs. I think the way that they played the performance Jokic did yesterday, where he could literally take over the game in any different aspect, whether it's playmaking, the scoring was just phenomenal, the rebounding for 20 rebounds. And this is not against rebounds. No like bad rebound. This is LeBron James down there, Anthony Davis down there. That is an insane game for him.
I also think the Nuggets are doing a great job of like negating Austin Reeves. I think they're defending mm-hmm. him extremely well. You see KCP like really sitting in that chair. Mm-hmm. Like he's making him uncomfortable. And Austin Reeves down the end of this regular season was hooping.
And he's now, a big X factor.
Well, I think another part of that is some Austin's still growing in that area where, like, when he's trying to get that contact and he's trying to finish at the basket and just getting his, like, shots better, they're not calling him a lot of them fouls anymore. So when he does look for it and is not getting it, it just kind of looks bad on his part, too.
I do love the fact that the refs aren't calling those fouls.
I agree with it. I've always been a part of it, too, where it's just like if the refs called every foul during the game, we'd probably be there for, like, three days straight.
That's why I try not to complain.
Yeah. And they were talking about, in kind of like reference to the Knicks game or whatever, it could be the Lakers game too, it's just like, do not put the game in the hands of the ref.
I will say, that play where D'Lo got smacked in the face.
Yeah.
They reversed
when you're getting hit in the head, I think it's different. Getting hit in the face and in the head, that's damn near an automatic foul.
We literally was sitting in here, and they went to review that. We all went to the vending machine. Because we was like, oh, they're going to review it, and they going to...
He was like, Mike Malone made a bad decision by calling their...
I guess, apparently, that was a great decision because they overturned it.
So. Derek, I want to ask you, just from a player's perspective, and I know you're not an NBA talent or anything like that.
I was close.
But and you have a game like this where you're on a roll, you're in Denver, a team that you've been 0-9 against prior to this game. And you go out and you kind of had the perfect game. The first half, you win by 15 points at a point in that third quarter. You eventually get that to a 20-point lead. And to lose this game in like a quarter and a half, you lose a 20-point lead, but then you also lose the game. How do you bounce back and try to convince yourself that you still have a chance? Or do you think you can? Do you think, like, realistically speaking, you go in that locker room and it's so deflated? Obviously, they're going to tell themselves and say the right things. We still, it's a lot of basketball left. But realistically, how much hope should the Lakers or can the Lakers have after losing a game like this?
I mean, I think they got to look at it and say that Anthony Davis gave us a great game. LeBron and D'Lo all gave us a great game. All we really need is something from, like, Austin Reeves or Rui. Somebody just give us a little something. And I know we're going back home. We in L.A. And I know it's cliche, and I say it a lot, but role players do play better at home. I think Rui, Austin Reeves, and D'Lo, them, they're going to have way more impactful and better games back in the Staples Center. And I think you got to have a mindset of, hey, we got to go protect home court. And then we'll come back here and steal one later. We can't look ahead. We just got to take it one game at a time at this point.
Yeah, I guess, like, for you to get the confidence to say you could beat them, I think you got to punch them in the mouth.
Yes.
Like, literally, you need to win by double digits in game three.
Game three got to be a statement game.
I mean, I'll take a single-digit win or any type win.
Game two is right there to be a statement game.
You got to just get the W. But I think for a statement, you have to come and punch them in the mouth.
What's punching them in the mouth?
Like a double-digit win. And, like, convincingly.
So, game two.
Yeah.
Game two if you continue to do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do y'all think they can beat them?
Can they beat them? Yes.
I'm saying in a literal sense. They haven't. The last 10 games, they've lost against them. They just got swept in the last year. And then you had a 20-point lead in the third quarter, and you lost it. At this point, I'm really considering, like, can they beat them? Because last night was a game where I was happy for y'all because I want to see a series. No team yet, and some of these games, we're going to get game two tonight. No team has won on a road yet. They say a series doesn't start until a team wins on a road. I thought my Knicks were going to have a chance to lose that game. We end up winning. So I'm watching the Lakers game. I'm like, man, are we going to get 1-1 in any series? And y'all was up. Y'all was doing y'all thing. And then to see y'all lose that game, and me and Derek were saying the whole night, even when you was up and you said, we like, we ain't buying it. I got to see a second half from them. Game one, they did the same thing.
The whole time I'm thinking.
But when Austin was over there and said, oh, they got it up to 20, my whole thought process of they got to prove it is
like,
out the window.
Yeah. They're dominating them.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and you got to think that you can maintain that for another 24 minutes. But my whole thing is when they were up 20, I feel like the biggest enemy was that there was still like 9 minutes left in the third. And like, it was just so much time left. And it's like against the Nuggets, they're not going to just fold away.
And it seemed like time was moving so slow.
It was. I felt like the second half was so long. And it was just like, man, if they could have just replicated the first half.
That it do be feeling like that. Like when I used to watch the Bulls going against the Heat and the Bulls would have a lead, and it'd be like, man, that clock just going so low, so slow.
But you know, the thing about the Lakers is I think that is okay as a fan and as a viewer, but I think as a team they kind of play like that. And I think as a team you can't play like that. You have to play the game. You can't be looking at the clock. You can't be hoping that the time go off. You got to just play.
I thought they started looking at the clock around like 5-6 minutes left because they were just walking it up slow and they were getting into the little ISO or whatever they wanted to do. They weren't playing as if it was still five to basically, you feel like 10 minutes left in the clock.
Mm-hmm. I also want to say, play. Darvin Ham,
questionable decisions.
Coaching. Yeah. I think also when you're talking about calling timeouts, don't feel like the Lakers really run anything out of timeouts.
Yeah, we saw
it's a very predictable offense down the stretch.
We saw a timeout where we was expecting something to happen, and all it turned into was LeBron and Anthony Davis doing a handoff.
The same thing they've been doing all game.
Yeah.
Like, the Nuggets run certain actions. They run different plays down the stretch of the game. They still run a fluid offense. It's not just, hey, Jamal's on the ISO, and we're going to see what happens after that. Mm-hmm. No, they run a two-man action. There's guys cutting, setting screens. There's a lot of things going on where you have to react to the defense.
Let me ask, this is both of y'all. In his defense, when you look at the games, when you look at the game that some of these players is having, who gives you confidence to do anything other than that? Rui Hachimura was basically non-existent. I'm right here to say I don't think Spencer Dinwiddie should ever play another minute in this series. And I'm not even being funny or mean. No. I'm just being straight up. I just don't see what he's giving the Lakers right now. Jackson Hayes should only play if you literally think Anthony Davis has no way to survive another minute on the floor.
Hold on. Can I just ask you something? What do you, when you hear Spencer Dinwiddie, what do you think he's supposed to give you?
Some type of punch off the bench offensively.
Suddenly shooting or something like
something.
He don't even shoot the ball.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Darvin Ham, looking at him, is like maybe he's got some skill set and he could play defense, but, like, he's supposed to shoot the ball. That's his value.
Yeah.
Shoot the ball.
The only person that I mean, Torian Prince and even that you know, Torian Prince is giving you something at least. I can see why you throw in Gabe Vincent for a handful of minutes
because
he can make two threes. Yeah, something like that. Jackson Hayes, I don't get. Spencer Dinwiddie, and I get it. They're a little short-handed right now. Jared Vanderbilt, hopefully he can return. Christian Wood, whatever.
Christian Wood, he can't play in the series. There's no way Christian Wood can play in the series. Do you know Jokic is going to feast in those Christian Wood minutes?
But back to my original thing. To his defense, what other thing? Look at the second half. D'Lo was 2-6 after having a red hot. Austin Reeves was 2-3. But even then, he only took 3 shots in the second half. Rui Hachimura took more shots than him in the second half. At some point, these other guys are going to have to figure out a way to have complete game. Like, that's what I look at from the Lakers. I feel like LeBron James and Anthony Davis are going against the Nuggets. And that's no shot at D'Lo because he had an incredible first half, and he is a big reason why they're even here to be in a playoff series. But they have to have a complete effort. You cannot have this duo against the starting five of the Nuggets because the Nuggets are going to beat you every time that way. They're going to have a complete game. You can't have Anthony Davis have a big first half and then don't do nothing much in the second half. You can't have LeBron try to turn it up in the fourth when he didn't. They have to have a complete game. Because the Nuggets are going to do that. Jamal Murray may have a tough half, but he's going to play. He's going to stay aggressive. These are the shots that I'm taking. I feel like the Lakers are so wishy-washy. If this is your role, you have to do it. We're going to talk about the Knicks, but one of the things that people keep saying about Jalen Brunson is he's shooting the ball horrendously, which he is. But I think there's value in players saying, this is my role, this is what I do. MPJ, we've seen games where MPJ can't make a shot, but he's taking his same shot. He hit a big shot yesterday that was a very ballsy three that I don't think a lot of other players would have taken. But because that's his job, that's what they pay me to do, I have to take these shots. And sometimes a few of these other guys on the Lakers, they don't do that. And I understand it's a little tough and different playing with LeBron James, but I would love to see Austin Reeves a little bit command himself in the second half and saying, they need this for me. This is what they had. This is why I'm here. I'm here to take and make this shot. If I miss it, I miss it. But we can't be the team we can be and beat this team if I'm not being who they want me to be. Mm-hmm. And everybody has to buy into that because.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. I think it just makes the job easier when you know, understand what your role is instead of trying to like be that guy every single night. And again, I agree with you because the Lakers. We agreed that there's times where they look really good.
Yes.
And there's times where they look bad. And I think the times where they look good is when everybody's kind of on. Mm-hmm. Versus LeBron has 50 points and he's taking over. You know, so I wish we could have got a little bit more in our variety of shots and everything like that. Maybe it's definitely kind of falling back a little bit on Darvin Ham with the play calling. And also, I think that comes to rotations too when you have so many people that can really handle the ball and use the ball. And that's something you kind of work on during the regular season in terms of like this guy, he's going to work a little bit better with the ball when these guys are out here. You know, but you can't do that now in the playoffs.
I also think I think the Lakers are so three happy too. When you really look at how the Nuggets beat y'all, they really went in. That the points in the paint differential is very key. They almost outscored y'all in the paint by 20 points. Y'all had 38 points in the paint, they had 54. Mm-hmm. And we know they have some shooters and guys that can make shots, Jamal Murray, KCP, Michael Porter Jr. But I definitely think it's extremely evident to take what the defense is giving you. And when we saw them really make that statement to turn the game around, when we were all sitting on this couch like, oh, man, here we go, they really solidified themselves in that paint.
Yeah, Jokic was just posting up every possession.
Boom, especially
during those Rui minutes. He would just pass it off to the wing, and he'd go just post up, and he'd just eat. And then if you sent the double, he was just going to make the right pass.
And I think the Lakers can do some of that. Obviously, they don't have a Jokic, so I'm not saying that they should have 54 points in the paint either. But I just feel like,
I mean, they have LeBron and Anthony Davis. I think those are two guys that could definitely get total.
Anthony Davis got to be gassed or something, because the second half just be so crazy.
They do.
I mean,
so maybe it gets a little bit better when he's back in Staples and the air is not as thin. But LeBron James, a lot of times those matchups, I wish they could have had some type of action. If they was going to get the switch, try to get LeBron in that, like, a little bit closer to the rim or the post up, because as soon as he kind of put his head down, they were all flying at him, and you've seen it. They weren't calling all the calls. So I think with the post up, it's a little bit more of a, like, I don't know. I feel like it's just easier to do that versus, like, kind of just putting your head down and going through a wall. Kind of take your time, and if the move is there, go ahead. If they're doubling, kick it out.
Yeah, the thing about Anthony Davis being gassed, I mean, I want to use it as an excuse, but Jokic is tired too. Like, Jokic is having to defend him as well. Like, I know Anthony Davis has to guard him and try to be, but Jokic has to do the same damn thing. And Jokic is still going out there and just fighting through it. Sometimes when you want to be that guy, be that championship pedigree type of player, you got to fight through adversity and fight through being tired. That being tired,
I ain't saying it with no valid excuse. I just try to put reason to it for why he could have such a dominant first half and then be nothing in the second half.
No, I agree. When you look at the overall game, Anthony Davis, 14-19, that's 74% from the field, 32 points, 11 rebounds, a block, a steal, two assists. He had a really good game, but when you dive in and you watched it like we did together, that second half, to see him only take seven shots, and then I don't know. I just said, like, it's a lot of threes being flown around. And rightfully so for D'Angelo Russell, who went 7 of 11. Austin Reeves, 1 of 5. Gabe Vincent, only 2 shots were from 3. Torian Prince, all of his shots were from 3. Like, they just out there just like 3 a dime.
I mean, besides LeBron, that's kind of been like the identity for at least the second half of the season. They didn't. That's how when Darvin Ham said all that skill set he's going to put out there, he meant all offense. We're going to take shots. We just not going to defend how we used to, and that's going to be okay.
Switching gears over to the Knicks game, which was a very exciting game to watch.
Oh my God.
First and foremost, because I'm a Knicks fan and I was excited, happy. What fan wouldn't be happy after a win like that? That was just a moment. What are y'all initial thoughts to the specific ending of that, which you're going to see on a lot of Twitter, NBA Twitter, a lot of Philadelphia 76er fans are going to say it's rigged. The refs gave them the game. What are y'all, just because y'all are two non-biased people.
I'm always in favor of the refs not making really, not, like, if it's obvious, like if a dude gets clotheslined, call the foul. But like, I feel like at the end of the game, close game like that, a lot of dudes are holding, trying to, there's doing little things to try to get to their advantage. I think you just got to go out there and hoop at that point. I know Tyrese, they were saying he got held, but he got to hold on to the damn ball.
Yeah, like in those late games,
he said that to himself. Yeah. He said that to himself. And I remember Paige Buckets from UConn said after they lost their game on like a screen call that was called offensive foul, she had a statement which is like, one play never defines the entire game.
Yeah.
And Tyrese Maxey kind of said the same thing, because he was like, you know, I got to hold on to the ball. We got a rebound. And then he also mentioned that turnover he had when he was going on a fast break and he just lost it.
Yes.
Those are the things that, like, I think good basketball teams and good basketball players are going to focus on, is like those type of things. Because you're right. In playoff basketball, number one, my biggest argument or kind of gripe with fans, and I get it, when you lose that way, you're trying to find anything to justify it. It's a hard loss. So I'm not mad at Sixers fans at all. But this is also what we asked for.
Yeah.
We love the playoffs because it's like, okay, we ain't going to get the whistle. You also have somebody like Joel Embiid, who that whistle is his advantage. You know what I mean? And he does a really good job of it. And it is what it is. He manipulates it and he uses it to his advantage. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. The only thing I don't like about it is because of his injury history, I hate seeing him sell shit so much and seeing him constantly on the floor.
Yeah.
But James Harden did it for years. I had no problem with it. If you know how to manipulate contact and get fouls and, you know, they're giving it to you and you can use it to your advantage, cool. The only thing I say is be careful when you're always on the floor because we know you don't hurt yourself. And secondly, you're going to look like a damn fool when you don't get the foul.
Yep.
Be prepared to not always rely on it. When you start to rely and do all of that.
You know what's my favorite thing?
What?
When a player tries to get the foul on three and they throw up some crazy and stuff and they just don't get it and they got to look at the ref.
And then not only is it a waste of possession, you look stupid, but because you have to justify that dumb shot you just took, you probably are letting the other team score because you're wasting time. You're not getting back. It's a 5-on-4. So it's like a double-edged sword. But your thoughts on the end of the game?
I thought it was tough. I thought it was tough that Philly ends up losing that game, and mostly because of kind of Joel Embiid. After game one, I didn't know if he was going to play game two. And to see him out there and kind of doing his thing and then eventually kind of start laboring and he just didn't look the right or look as good, it would have been so good to take that game and have some confidence on your back. Man. But now you're down 0-2 and still Embiid's health is a question mark. Whether he's out there or not, he's not 100%. You have to kind of look forward. You know, you got to move on. But they still got some hope. They still looked really good. I liked a lot of the efforts that the other people had gave them.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrese Maxey was nuclear in that fourth quarter. So they got a lot of good things going. It's just that was, again, one that you had right there and it kind of fell through your hands.
Yeah, hopefully they can get some contributions from, like, Tobias Harris. I know Tobias Harris is...
Hey, a lot of people on Twitter and social media talking about Tobias Harris and everything. That's cool. Where is Buddy Hield at?
Well, Buddy Hield hasn't been a factor since he's been traded there, so... I don't know.
Yeah, Buddy Hield ain't made no noise since he was on the Pacers.
That's what I'm saying, though. They went out and traded for him, and it's supposed to be a situation where you're playing with a guy who commands double teams, and then you have another threat in Maxey who is fast, lightning, can shoot. All of that attention that those two draw, you would think this is a dream scenario for Buddy Hield. And the fact that he hasn't.
Because they did miss him. When Joel Embiid was out and Buddy Hield was there, obviously he couldn't play with them and get that familiarity. But you would think it would be a little bit simple for Buddy Hield to just be catch a shoot, right? Yeah.
But maybe he catches fire. Maybe Tobias catches fire. They just need one other person to just catch fire and just give them something and get a rhythm.
I agree.
Because, like, it's kind of easy when you're talking about – I mean, it ain't easy, but, like, Joel's on one bad leg, and he's still giving you 30 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrese Maxey's still giving you 34 this series. So, like, they really just need one more little punch. And I think that could be the whole determining factor of the series.
The Knicks
are doing it by committee.
Yeah.
They just out there working hard. Hey, everybody doing their thing.
The Knicks got that stuff.
I will say Philly's
I love me some Knicks.
Philly's length is definitely giving Brunson some problems because he's being guarded by Oubre. I know Kyle Lowry's tall, but Kyle Lowry's a tough, gritty defender.
Yes.
Tobias Harris is on him. Nicholas Batum is on him.
Yes.
Like, he's
Tyrese Maxey, when he has the matchup, gives it maximum effort.
Yes. So, like, Jalen Brunson is real life being defended by guys that are just bigger, longer, and stronger than him. And you can definitely tell it's bothering him a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and he's getting – I feel like he's getting to spots that he normally does hit. He just hasn't really found that rhythm in this series. Yeah. But y'all do it by committee. I think Josh Hart, the way he shot the ball in game two, was very, like, good to see after the game one. Dante hitting his shots. And I think the best thing y'all do is y'all can beat a team by outworking them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, a beautiful thing for a team to have. Like, y'all going to fight on the glass, obviously fight for possessions, and that can end up winning you a game.
I just don't know how much I trust in this hot shooting by Josh Hart. Like, he's hot. Like, he's made 5 threes in each game.
You have to play devil's advocate, though. So if you're not trusting that, are you trusting Jalen Brunson being this poor shooting the entire series?
Maybe not this poor, but I still do think that the defense of the Sixers will still cause some problems a little bit. Especially when you talk about him getting to the basket, now he's running into Joel Embiid at a consistent basis. Like, even though Joel isn't 100%, he's still a very good rim protector. He's a 7-footer. So I still think that there's a way where they could still bother him, make him uncomfortable a little bit.
Oh, they're going to bother him. But, I mean, he's shooting very bad. Yeah,
terribly bad.
He's shooting so bad that I think it can only go up from here.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying, like, if you don't believe in the Josh Hart thing, then it's hard for me to believe in the Jalen Brunson shoot like this the rest of the series. To each his own, though. I don't really look at us winning from an offensive standpoint. Like, I see everybody talking about how bad the shooting is and this shot and that shot and everything, and that's all cool and dandy. I'm looking at us outworking them. Like you said, I think Joel Embiid is gassed. You see it so much in the second half. And I give credit to Philly. They came out and rebounded a lot better in game two. But still, those most crucial plays, because it is playoff basketball, to get that second, third possession, it changes the game. We just saw it. Isaiah Hartenstein getting that last offensive rebound won us the game.
Yep.
And a lot of the rebounds that I see us get is Joel Embiid being gassed, number one. And I see some possessions, not all the time, but some possessions, I even see him point to somebody to go get it because he's gassed and he's not moving as well. And it's understandable. But the Knicks know that. It looks like it's in our game plan. They're watching film. And our players are being told, Joel Embiid is taking some plays off on that glass. Go get it. And Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein, Josh Hart, OG Anunoby. I see Dante DiVincenzo flying in. I've seen Jalen Brunson get to his spot, miss it, get his own rebound. Like, we are crashing that glass at a premium. And this is playoff basketball where every possession matters. And the fact that we sometimes get a second shot, a third shot in one possession, it gives us all of the advantage.
And it just sucks the life out of the other opposing team, especially when you're talking about Joel having to now sit down and play defense all over again. Like, that's draining as a big. As somebody who played big.
I was going to say that. You know about that firsthand.
When I got to play extra defense and a pick and roll, I was like, we go
again. And that's healthy you. This is him on one leg.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking at. I believe in us to be able to close it out and continue to do what we're doing by making that happen, by going out and having the extra plays and really beating them up. Philadelphia is a really good team. I respect the hell out of them. This series is not over by any stretch. All we did was what we were supposed to do. You come out and you protect home court. Until we go to their house and win that game, one of these two games, this series is still wide open. They could easily come back and win two games at home, and it's a tied series. So
I think this is a seven-game series. I won seven games of this. This has been great.
It has
first
been.
Two games.
The coaching, so,
yes.
The matchups.
I don't want to see this end. I do not want to see this go four or five. I want to get all seven of this.
As a Knicks fan, I want to see this go five. That was my prediction. But as a basketball fan, seven wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, especially seeing them go out and just have a dog fight in that seven. Oh, my God. Yeah.
In the Garden, that stage. Yes. But that's why I don't want to see that, because that Garden, that stage, has guys like Maxie and Embiid act crazy. Because Maxie was putting on the show last night. I got to give all respect to Maxie. And they talking about might not play, didn't participate in the shoot-around. I'm reading all those reports like, yeah, all right.
They playing
chess? Yeah, right. Shout out to Kyle Lowry. I feel like Kyle Lowry's been big in this series with that. He's played like a Knick in this series for them. He's done the extra little work. He's getting his hands in the cookie jar. He's being physical. Every time I look up and we're having good rotations on Embiid and Maxie, it feels like Kyle Lowry makes a big one. At least in the first half, it felt that way. In the second half, I think a little bit everybody was kind of doinking. But I agree with you. They need somebody who can be that third punch.
Yeah.
Because Tobias hasn't had it. Kelly Oubre, who I think can sometimes be a guy that could benefit from playing at home to fit your role players are better at home. He could have a game. Buddy Hield.
Batum.
And what happened to D'Anthony Melton? Yeah. At the end of the season, we was doing the strands and we were seeing D'Anthony Melton play. What happened to him?
I couldn't tell. He's just not playing.
Yeah, he's just that's
maybe
been
Nick Nurse just feels like he ain't ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, because I kind of like D'Anthony Melton with this team a lot. I will say, though, regardless of how this series wraps, I do still have my Knicks winning it and edging out. I think the Sixers have to be a little careful.
It's saying back for D'Anthony Melton.
Yeah, the same thing that was bothering him before. So he tried to come back at the end of the season in those games, and it probably re-aggravated it or just felt wasn't ready. I think the future is bright for Philly. And I hope that they're – and I'm not saying this, you know, but I hope they're cautious, because every game of this series, I look at it and I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if I get a notification that, like, Joel Embiid is out.
Yeah, because when you see him running up and down the court, like, barely being able to
get up. What you mean running?
He's literally limping up the court. And it's like, do I want my MVP caliber player on the court risking maybe – hurting his knee even more to where we probably don't even have him next season? I just think that's such a huge risk when you're talking about him putting all that force and labor onto his knees. Yeah,
and I know it's hard too, because without him being 100%, there's just almost no way you can win a championship.
No,
so it's just like, at what point do we kind of fold our chips? So if they ended up going down 0-3 or whatever, I also definitely would not be surprised if I seen them, like, Joel Embiid is out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, if you go down 0-3, I feel like there's no need to risk it. At that point, the odds are completely
But they were saying during the
favor.
Thing, there was like, there's no structural damage. So obviously he's in pain or whatever, but it's like,
he can't make it worse.
Any worse than it already is. But I never like hearing those type of things at all.
Yeah. That's when you have to, as a player and an agent, and like, you have to make a business decision for yourself. Yeah. Because I agree with y'all. If you go down 3-0, I mean, I love the fight. You know, you definitely want to compete. That's what your job. That's what you're out there to do. And a series is never over until it's over. Just like a game. Like the Knicks. Yeah. The Knicks could have just folded and been like, oh, man, we down 4. This game is over. But they kept fighting, and you get something magical that can't happen. But because the future is so bright, because they're going to have a boatload of money in the offseason, because you have these rumors of potentially going out there and getting Paul George, which you talked about in the pre-show, you have a chance to be right back next year as one of the top teams in the
East. I was going to say, there's no rush. Like, I mean, Joel Embiid is still in his prime. There's no question. I think he'd still be an MVP candidate coming into next season if he's fully healthy. Like, it's still right there. Tyrese Maxey is young as hell.
Yeah.
So the core is going
to
be there. You don't got
to
worry about
that. Off season, you add a Paul George to this roster. Joel Embiid now gets a lot more time to rest. You can load manage him a little bit more. And then now when it comes playoff time, Joel Embiid is now.
Paul George get the load management. You forget.
But they both got Maxey. Yeah.
They both got Maxey.
A dynamic duo on the court at all times. So I think
I agree with this because Maxey says something about being the first option when Embiid was out and the experience he was gaining. And how defense are able to key in. And I think he got a little bit of experience from that. And I think that can be something that can carry over into this duo's tenure together as they go forward, because you are going to have to think about that. And I think it's something the Clippers, that we'll talk about in the second half of the show, they'll have to think about too. We've seen a lot of players come out and try to really play as many games as they could to be able to get these awards and to be eligible for certain things. And now we're kind of seeing, is it worth it? You know what I mean? Like, Anthony Davis is doing his thing, but is he going to run? Is this an effect from him trying to play every game? Is he burnt out? Joel Embiid, did he come back too soon? Kawhi Leonard, is the knee swelling up again? Will he be able to return? It's a lot of different questions that you have to really consider. Like, is it worth it to push these guys to their max if they're just not built that way? Yeah. Every player would love to be healthy. Every player wants to be able to be eligible for awards. But if your body is literally refusing it, the team and a player and their surrounding foundation, agent, whatever, they have to come up with some plans to allow these guys to be at their best during this time. This is what matters.
Yes.
This is absolutely what matters. So we'll see. Predictions for game three.
I'm going to go Knicks. No, I'm going to go Sixers in game three.
I got Knicks game three.
Yeah. Damn, you think it's going to be 3-0?
I got Knicks.
I think Sixers is going to come back and fight.
I got Knicks game three, too. I think this is
all my confidence is kind of – Joel Embiid does not look – like mobily well out there, and that
concerns me. Especially in the
me.
Second half. Yeah. It is so glaring in the second half. And credit to him. He still hoops.
Yeah.
He still hoops and does what he does.
Hey, that's got to be one of the craziest ways to injure yourself with the, like, self-lob to the poster.
Oh yeah.
And Kelly Oubre was trying to celebrate with him, and then he kind of realized Joel Embiid was trying to fall to the ground. That's tough.
And that play was so amazing.
It was crazy. It was such a nasty dunk. But for you to get hurt on it is crazy.
Yeah. I definitely got us in game three, though. I think this is kind of similar to the Lakers, except we weren't ever down a dub. But I think their highest lead was like 14. I think the first three or so quarters, they really controlled the game. I think they came out and they held us below 20 points in the first quarter. We had an 18-point first quarter. They really controlled that game for a lot of it until literally that fourth quarter at the end there. But I just don't think that Jalen Brunson is going to continue to struggle. I agree with Mike. I think he made some really good adjustments in game two. I think as a team, we made some adjustments offensively, and he was able to get the looks that I like him getting. They just didn't fall. And I'll take that versus him literally in game one. It was all over the place. Losing the ball, getting blocked from behind. Game two, he was just really missing those shots. But I also want to take some time out before we go into our break and talk about, I kind of alluded to it in the first series where we talked about with the Lakers. I got to give Jalen Brunson praise because he keeps going.
Yes.
And I think that's an underrated thing. We're right now in the analytical standpoint of the game, especially on social media and whatnot, where everybody is so efficiency driven. And don't get me wrong, anytime you can be efficient, that's brilliant and that's real good. But I think when we talked about the Lakers in a row, when you're a star player, you're the number one option, you have a job to do when you're out there to be a scorer. Whether you're making the shots, missing the shots, you have to keep going, because what it does is it puts a certain amount of pressure on that defense to keep them honest, and it allows everything else to open up. I really think the big difference in that second half was Isaiah Hartenstein hitting those flip shots and going. He was scoreless in the first half, but because of the attention Jalen Brunson was commanding from his point of attack defender and then Embiid and the help, it allowed him to really dump it off to Isaiah Hartenstein, and he started to get a rhythm, and he started making some tough flippy shots that I kind of was like, I don't know if that's going in, and he made them down the stretch, and it really kept us in that little swing. That was a point in time where we couldn't take the lead, but we kept it close enough because of those shots. And I think a lot of those looks for other guys come from the attention he demands. If Jalen Brunson or any number one option is struggling and they go and say, I don't want to take these shots no more, I don't want to miss no more, social media is going to be on me, it now allows the other team to kind of key in on some other guys. Josh Hart don't get the looks he's getting if Jalen Brunson doesn't stay aggressive. DiVincenzo does not get those open looks if Brunson doesn't get stay aggressive. Philadelphia saying, focus on it. There's possessions where I see all five guys watching Brunson, and that's why those misses, OG can splat in and go get the offensive rebound. That is such an underrated part of the job as a number one option that I think a lot of people don't realize how hard and important and tough it is when it gets dirty like this, when it gets bad. He's shooting, what, like 12 of 57 in two games.
Come on now. You know we love us some Kobe Bryant. Kobe ain't never stopped shooting the ball.
Thank you.
Imagine if Kobe was shooting, had a bad game, and he said, you know what, I can't do
this. You get 12 extra shots.
I don't care. Take them shots.
That's why take Jamal Murray ended up hitting that dagger with the Lakers. He kept Jamal take Murray. Them shots. He literally started the game like 2 for 12, and then eventually he started cooking. And later, Jalen Brunson, he might not have started cooking like Jamal Murray was in the fourth quarter. But
he made the biggest one.
He made the biggest one that doinked in.
Yes, that doink.
The Sixers can't get away from the doink. But I just think it's great to see Jalen Brunson keep it going. That's why I have confidence that maybe he will start to get it going at some point. Because when you're an all-star player, you can't just get passive.
And I'll tell you one thing. Once you get
passive, the defense wins.
Even if he does continue to struggle, there is going to have to be an adjustment Philly makes. They're down 2-0.
Yeah.
They can't afford to go down 3-0 by letting the others beat us. The others can't beat you.
Yeah. It's easy outwork, to say that. Literally outwork you.
Yeah. I do think Josh Hart still will have open threes, though.
Oh yeah,
that's probably the poison you just kind of take.
Yeah, you have to find that guy in the lineup, and they'll have that. But it also is something that is a tough. This is why they get paid the big bucks, the coach, and not us, because not being guarded allows him to have 15 rebounds.
Yes, it allows him to go in uncontested for offensive boards. So yeah,
you got to really pick your poison.
Josh Hart on the drive is not bad either. No, like when he catches it and he's going, he can make a
gunny. Stan Van Gundy said Giannis, LeBron, and then Josh Hart from coast to coast.
Yeah.
He said he puts them in that level. Like, LeBron and Giannis are better.
He's like 6'5", but I promise you, he's going to hit you with that body, and you're going to move.
When he said that, you're going to move. One of the best coast-to-coast players? I was like, that sounded a little iffy, but I was...
It makes sense.
I guess.
Anytime you hear his name with LeBron and Giannis, you're going to kind of like do that. But as a Knick person, I watch a lot of Knick games, he ain't lying. You're not lying.
I said Nas Reed in that conversation too.
Nas Reed do call his own number sometimes when he get the board. He not passing it.
Nas Reed in high school was called Big Jelly. He was in Jelly Fam. The only big in Jelly Fam. Jelly Fam was all guards, but they threw Nas Reed in there. So he got a little something in his game to be able to do that. But yeah, the greatest example, and I know you're gonna love this, of a guy continuing to shoot, is that 2011 or 2010 finals, Dirk.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. In that fourth quarter, yes,
gotta
that
keep
was,
shooting.
That was amazing.
You got to keep shooting. That's why I always tell people, I don't worry about efficiency. If I'm going to be efficient, hey, fab, yeah. If I can have 35 points and I shot 90%, phenomenal. Yeah. But if I have a game where I'm not efficient and I hit the game winner like Jamal Murray, you think I care?
Nope. Bro, my biggest thing is time and score.
Yes,
I don't care about anything else.
We're going to go into our first break of the show and hear a word from our sponsor. Before we get back, we'll talk about the rest of the series that's going on in the playoffs. We'll be back.
Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the type of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and over must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. License through or to Bossier City and Harris, New Orleans, Massachusetts. If you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK 467-369.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to Numbers on the Board. Got a lot more playoffs to discuss. Real quick, they played yesterday as well. They're two games in. Thoughts on the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Orlando Magic series that's going on over and there?
Honestly, I felt a little bit, and I know it's a different series because the Magic are just such a young team compared to the Cavaliers. But when Kendrick Perkins was talking about the Boston and the Heat, like there's just levels to it. I felt like the same thing for about the Magic because no matter what, like the Magic have played so well and they've been playing all right. I know the shooting has been horrific, but I think the defense has been pretty good. Obviously, rebounding Paolo for his first series, I think he's been all right. Turnovers are a little crazy, but a lot of the times, I think that's a lot. That's just credit to the Cavs defense. You know, I think the Cavs are doing a lot better job at closing down the paint. You know, the Magic have been a good defense year, good all year for defense. So have the Cavs. Paint defense has been good. Y'all not defending the paint like Evan Mobley and Jared Allen are going to do. Hey, y'all can hit some shots. Y'all not going to hit as many shots as Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland and Max Schuster and all. Like, they just beating them on so many different levels. It's like no matter how well the Magic play, I don't think they're coming out with a win.
I just think the Magic goes through such dry spells because they don't really know what to do as an offense. It's such a young team. I know Paolo, he is the number one option, but like I don't think he's at that star superstar level yet to where he can like carry you through a playoff.
I think you can kind of think about what Tyrese Maxey was talking about as that like number one option. You just get that experience, and that's what I was honestly looking at, especially with the turnovers he's had. That's gonna be different in a couple years, you know, because it's just he's getting all that knowledge and experience now. That is good for, like, you know what I'm saying?
I'm
like,
surprised y'all feel that way.
And I think he's learning the difference between playoff basketball and regular season basketball. Like, when you're going against a Cleveland Cavalier team with so much length and good defenders, you got to see that every game.
Because, you know, I was thinking the same thing. Like, when we used to talk about Donovan Mitchell, how we wish he would, like, his playmaker would open up a little bit more, especially when the playoffs come and everybody's got his eyes on him and they're gonna make other people shoot the ball. Like, that's how I felt when I was watching Paolo. I was like, Donovan Mitchell kind of went through this a couple of years ago. And obviously, like, Donovan Mitchell was crazy in terms of, like, he was able to just kind of contribute right away out the NBA, especially as, like, not like a lottery pick. Yeah. A lottery pick people kind of looked at to do that. Like, Donovan Mitchell went through the same struggles when he was in Utah.
No, you know? Absolutely. I don't want to act like y'all saying anything wrong. Y'all not. He is gaining experience. He is learning what playoff basketball is. These are all things he was going to have to go through. But when I watch the first game and a lot of this game in pieces because they was playing at the same time. They spilled over into two games, but I was going back and forth. I really look at Paolo, and I'm trying to figure out the proper way to say it. I kind of feel bad for him.
Why?
Because this team, they can't make a shot.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, a lot of what y'all are saying, I'm looking and I'm listening. Like, the experience part I can agree with. But I really look at it as that. Like, and I know basketball is a much more deeper thing and it has more depth than just that simple. But for the Magic, it is that simple. He is seeing bodies because nobody else can make a shot. Yeah. I mean, like, Cole Anthony has not made a field goal this entire series in two games. Markelle Fultz has had 1 point in two games. Joe Ingles, Jalen Suggs went
Joe
Ingles.
John Isaac hasn't been much of an offensive
one of seven.
Punch.
Joe Ingles, from the field.
I seen him say, had a lot of open looks. He just could not. They actually, most of their, like, I'd say about 70% of their shots have been on damn near wide open or at least open for the NBA standards.
The first game, Gary Harris went 0-5 from three. Yeah. So it's like, as offensively gifted as he is, if they don't have anybody around, and we always talk about it, and I think I said it before. It's one thing to say, make him beat us, right?
Yeah.
And very rarely will a guy beat you.
Yeah.
We can say, hey, let Gary Harris beat us. If he makes 5-3, Gary Harris can make 5-3s and he still probably won't beat you. Mm-hmm. But when you're saying, let them beat us, and they are going one of this, one of that, one of this, dog, they shot 21% from three in the first game. I said in my video, there's no way, it's only up. There's no way they could shoot any worse today. And technically, they did shoot better. They shot 23%. They're the lowest.
When they shoot the ball, I just got that feeling like it's going to be off.
So like, it's like, it's really hard for
them. They haven't cracked 90 points in two games.
Yes, they're the lowest scoring.
And again, I'm giving some credit to the defense, too, because like, hey, it's easy when they're not hitting their shots. But, man, they've had a lot of turnovers off just active hands. And that's why I've been giving the Paolo a little bit of the slack with the turnovers because, like I said, it's very cluttered down there. And they've been playing well, but there's some turnovers that are like, you could be better than that. But most of those turnovers, I can see it's like he's young, you know? Yeah. You're going to learn.
And I just feel like when I'm watching and I see him get the ball at the top of the key or whatever, and you kind of see this.
But he's
going to
have, I think, not just him, because he's a star. So it's like, you're kind of more so want to like tend to him instead of like him trying to fit for more for the team. But he does have to get better at that cut and shoot. I think he does get a lot of looks, and obviously they want him to take that shot. But if he can knock that three down really good off that catch and shoot, it's going to open up that drive.
I mean, yeah, and in this previous game, Jared Allen had 20 boards. Like, he's feasting on the inside.
They get crushed on the glass.
Yeah.
They rebound a little bit better in game two, but that first game, they really got out-rebounded. And the crazy part is Donovan Mitchell has been good. I don't feel like the Cavs have had their game.
No, they haven't. I don't think Darius Garland has had that game yet either. That he can have Caris LeVert. He can have a big game out of nowhere. And
I feel like he's more back than what he was though. The end of season though,
absolutely.
For sure. I feel like he's definitely turning it up.
That week off, you could definitely tell he needed that.
He had one play, and I don't even know how locked in y'all in, but was on this game specifically. But he had one time when he was coming up the court. He had like a little spin crossover, and then he had found Jared Allen underneath the basket. And I was like, yeah, that's Donovan Mitchell. He's back.
Yeah, he ain't got that face mask on no more.
Yeah.
So y'all think this is a wrap? Y'all think it's sweep?
I think
or
it's
is there
a wrap.
Any way
or they might, go five. Okay. But I don't really
this was,
see the
Orlando after game win. One, I was thinking like, this is probably over.
Because Orlando be having little stretches. We'd be like, okay.
Well, they did play better
quarter,
at home.
That fourth quarter, they went on a 13-15 run or something like that.
And well, young team to go on their first road experience in the playoffs, it's a little tough. And it's a lot of jitters. You nervous.
You could tell because, I don't know, I feel like that was part of the reason why they were, especially in the first game. You've seen a lot of nerves out there.
Absolutely.
And that's
sure.
What I was like, man, this game going to be tough for them.
And Jalen Suggs had that knee injury early in that second game.
Said he's ready for game three.
I'm so happy he came back. I did not want to see them go out there and have to play without him.
Some of these other matchups that are going to be playing tonight, Mavericks-Clippers.
Oh, man.
One of the series that a lot of people were saying is probably going to be the best series. This is the one I want seven games of. You said Philly and the Knicks.
I want seven games of this, too.
Yeah.
I know that second quarter from Dallas Mavericks was very deflating. I don't think they'll duplicate that. There's no way they replicate that and come out and have another 8-point second quarter. That quarter determined this entire game.
Yes.
Like, they literally had to fight uphill because they scored 30 in the first half, and then they came out and scored 30 in the third. So, like, they literally scored the same amount of points in one quarter than they did in the whole first half. But I'm excited to see how Luka and Kyrie respond to this because, like, they did come out. and they had that shit out of a quarter, I feel like they got to come out and they got to punch first. They can't come out and, like, try to adjust or, like, talk about they game, they playing for Kawhi. They just got to come out guns blazing, and they just got to come out and set the tone, and they got to show why they one of the best duos in the league.
I definitely want to give KB his props just because they said that, and Kyrie and Luka went to the podium and said that we can give them that. But like I said on the show, dog, I'm not buying that. You cannot tell me that the Mavericks were so thrown off by Kawhi not playing that they came out and got their ass kicked like that. I'm just not buying it, bro. Yeah. We've seen Luka go head-to-head by himself against a healthy duo. So yes. You're telling me Kawhi not playing gave y'all such a curveball that y'all were just flabbergasted. Like, oh, my goodness. No.
And James Harden had a good game.
He had a really good game.
Especially up for his standards, very good game.
But you know what I loved about what the Clippers did versus the Mavericks?
What's up?
Is they, because it's the first game, it's a lot going on and everything happening, they went and they got some easy ones to get the rhythm. Yeah. They started off by giving that ball to Zubac, getting those dump downs. Paul George hit a three off of like some plays and different things like that. Luka and Kyrie came out jump shot heavy. They did a lot of settling instead of establishing a rhythm. And I think they can make those shots they miss. They are tough shot takers and tough shot makers. But I really think they have to emphasize setting up a rhythm and not being so quick to go into that pull-up out of the gate. They are one of the best pull-up shooting teams. Obviously, you have two great pull-up shooters and whatnot. But I think that was the difference for me. I think the Clippers kind of found the rhythm. Zubac got the Eaton early going at the first couple possessions. It's him really posting up Gafford and going at him. And then once you start to get the quick 6 points and y'all rolling and flowing, now you get dump it to him. You want to play Paul George, open catch and shoot three. And now you all just clicking versus Dallas. They starting off Luka step back three, y'all contesting. And again, he can make those shots. We've seen him all season long come out 20 points in the first quarter. But I just think to set the tone for the rest of the team, I would love to see them have a different approach. Because two guys I'm not worried about on Dallas is Luka and Kyrie. They're going to get theirs.
Yeah, they're going
to. But I think it's extremely important that you do get Gafford to have some input. You do get Lively some easy ones. You get Derrick Jones Jr. to make some shots. You get PJ Washington going and you know what's Hardaway Jr.
There's a domino effect to that. Now Gafford and Lively more engaged defensively. They locked in. They got that energy.
That trickle-down effect.
Yes. Yeah. And now PJ Washington, now he really sitting in that chair guard, James Harden and Paul George. And like he locked in because he know if I get to stop, I get to go down here and I might get a catch and shoot three.
Sure.
Or I might get a lob or something.
Yeah.
Now it's like you way more engaged and like now the energy back in your favor. So you definitely got to get your guys going. And I put that on Jason Kidd too. You got to go out there, you got to draw plays and get guys going. Mm-hmm. You got to sometimes use Luka and Kyrie as a decoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when you run ISO offense as heavy as the Dallas Mavericks do, sometimes, yeah, it's beautiful when you got Kyrie and Luka. But sometimes you just got to draw some easy stuff just to get guys going. Sometimes just drop a play to get Luka an easy layup. He don't always have to go out there and just post up, tat, tat, tat. And when you can get your star an easy bucket off a drawn up play, I think that's just magical basketball. That just shows how good you are as a coach and how good he is at adjusting to what you're doing.
That's why I always like that Warriors team, just for the fact that they had – some of the best offensive players,
yes.
They ran sets every time.
Steph Curry, you
didn't see them ISO like that at all. It was always going to be a nice play call. Even when KD was getting his touches, there was actions on the other side of going.
Facts.
So I love when you have the variety and just make the defense think more than just 10 eyes on you.
That's why I love the Spurs offense. The Spurs, even now when they're bad, they literally still run sets and you see guys passing, cutting, setting screens.
Mm-hmm.
That's just fundamental basketball to make the defense work. And I think it just opens up so much for you instead of just, hey, I'm going to stand at the top of the key and I'm going to ISO.
Yeah, and I think that's why Kyrie and Luka had a really good second half because they was putting some emphasis on getting some better looks, getting closer to that basket. I really think that I'm not worried about that duo if I'm Jason Kidd. If I'm them too, if I'm Kyrie or Luka, I know what we can do at any point in the game. We can go get ours. But I think the emphasis has to be getting these others involved. You look around, they had three guys in double figures. 33 for Luka, 31 for Kyrie. That's 64 points combined. The next highest score was PJ Washington at 11.
Yeah.
And then you got 0 from Derrick Jones Jr., 3 from Gafford, 3 from Lively. That front court should not be combining for 6 points.
And they shouldn't be letting Zubac just put his shoulder in his chest.
Zubac outscored that duo. If you told me that going into this first game or this series, that would happen, I would have been like, yeah, all right. Yeah. Maxi Kleber, 3 points. 3 points for Exum. 6 for Hardaway Jr. Like, really nobody get going. And you look at the Clippers side, they have 5 guys at double figures. Yes. Paul George, 22. Zubac with 20 and 15. Terrence Mann had 13. James Harden, 28. Russ had double digits. Yeah. Like, just all around doing a thing. Some really good minutes from Plumlee as well.
Ty Lue coached his ass off.
Yes, he did.
As well.
Yes, he did.
Every time that there was a run by Dallas, he called timeout, drew up a play, easy layup. Like, he drew up a play for Paul George, and all of a sudden, Paul George had a wide-open dunk. He drew up a play out of a timeout again. James Harden had a wide-open three at the top of the key. And it's like, those are just shots that you have to draw up sometimes. You just got to get it.
Game prediction for tonight game?
I got the
prediction. Prediction for tonight game. And what is your reaction, or how do you feel if the Mavericks go down 0-2 without Kawhi playing a minute?
I'm very nervous if they go down 0-2 without Kawhi. Because, like, if you can't beat this team without Kawhi, then, like, what the hell? When can you beat them? Because if they got Kawhi, you pretty much then don't have a chance at that point, because he's one of the best players in the league when you're talking about playoff time. So you pretty much don't have a chance. So I think they got to come out and steal this one, especially with the question mark of Kawhi not being there. Even if Kawhi is there, we don't even know if Kawhi is 100%.
Right.
Like, he's coming off a knee inflammation. You still got to come out there and play like this is our game to take, regardless if Kawhi is on the court or not.
And you also don't have any excuse because you've played without him.
Yes.
So you can't say he come out here, we were just thrown off because we prepared to play against Kawhi. So
I got the Mavericks punching back tonight.
Yeah, same.
But if they were to go down 0-2, I would still have some faith in them that they could pull out the series, even if they're down 0-2.
These two teams have had some crazy. Remember the last time they played, the Clippers lost both games at home, 0-2.
Yes.
Then they went to Dallas and won both. Like, that was the most crazy, because as soon as you lose your first two games at home, everybody's like, this is over. This is over.
But then they went on. Kawhi went on some crazy. Kawhi went Superman in that.
That was the first time the series was like, hey, this series started when somebody went at home. You ain't ever heard that before, yeah. DB. The role players was playing better on the road. I think I want to say that I got the Mavericks tonight, too. I think I picked the Mavericks to win the series. That game one really changed me. If James Harden is going to look that comfortable.
James Harden sometimes fools you, though. James Harden has these games.
I just don't see anybody on the Mavericks that could give him any resistance. He was comfortable. I think that's why he had a great game. He was legitimately comfortable.
But I also feel like he was looking like reminiscent of like Houston James Harden. He was, you know, step back threes. He had a step back midi. He was like in his bag.
He was.
So like a lot of times throughout the regular season, we saw those shots weren't falling for him. So maybe he just had a hot game, or maybe he just hot this series and he do propel him to win this. But he's going to have to show me that he could consistently make those step back threes at a high rate.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I can take away from that, just to give us a little pushback, is they won by 12 points. It ain't like they needed those shots. If you take away two of those step back threes.
It was that second quarter, bro.
It's that second quarter.
That's why Dallas shouldn't be too nervous. They have to look at this and say, we beat ourselves. We literally came out and had a stinker of a quarter. Like, that's literally what happened.
They did what?
They beat themselves.
Okay. Okay.
8 points in a quarter is a business.
Yeah, I wonder what's their lowest scoring quarter.
It has to be that.
I would think it's got to be eight.
There's
points.
No way in hell they
No. Like, outside of the eight. Yeah, eight is definitely the lowest score quarter. But let's Google it. And what are y'all guesses?
Like, just for Dallas?
Probably it's 14.
Probably eight. It's probably eight. Oh, no. Besides that, probably 12. 12, 14.
He said it's probably eight.
It's probably eight.
Single digits. When you have a single digit quarter, that's just embarrassing.
That doesn't even.
And it's like, hard to just bounce back from it.
Bro, it don't even sound right to have a single digit quarter because it's literally 12 minutes in the quarter.
Yes. Like,
you're not even putting up 1 point
per minute.
Per minute. And the buck accounts for two.
And you have Kyrie and Luka. That's what's also crazy about it. Both of those dudes can go off of eight and a quarter of them damn selves each.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it doesn't even make sense.
That quarter scoring was so bad that I can't even find you the answer, because every time you type it in, it automatically goes to the eight. Dallas was held to only 8 points in the second quarter, the Mavs' lowest scoring quarter of the season, according to ESPN Stats and Information Research. Shout out to ESPN Stats and Information Research.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another series that we have.
Okay, we got the answer. Dave, production team already.
Let's go.
The 1997. The Mavs scored 2 points versus the Lakers.
This season.
Yeah, this season.
This season. 1997. I can care less.
2 points. Two points
in a quarter. It's crazy.
Name me two players on a 1997 team.
I can't.
Jason Kidd, Jim Jackson, Jamal Mashburn had to be on that team.
Probably
the Triple J's. Dennis Rodman played with them a little later. But yeah, I wanted to know the lowest scoring from this season because you have Luka and Kyrie.
They probably gonna find. He said my bad, so they'll probably send it.
Oh no, not y'all bad. It's no bad. It's just confusion. What other series y'all want to go over and talk about? Minnesota? We got the Minnesota and the Suns.
It's two Minnesota Suns. The Suns got embarrassed, bro. Like
you think so?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they did, and it's not like mostly because the point differential.
The point
differential was the main thing, but the way that there was a lot of ways that the Timberwolves could have dominated them, I think that like the inside was kind of sweet for the Timberwolves, like with Rudy and Cat posting up on KD could be a real thing. I think they actually look to, especially if somehow, some way, you can even get KD in foul trouble that type of way. I think that's a bonus. Anthony Edwards looked like he could do whatever he went out there. Like, they didn't have nobody to stay in front of him.
For the Dallas Mavericks, though, on January 1st of this season, the Jazz held them to 11 points.
Boom. Thank you. Yep.
That is actually kind of bad, too, to bet against the Jazz.
Yeah.
But, again, the way the Suns didn't even put up the points like we know they usually do and see the Timberwolves of defense affect them, I think that's kind of worrying when we know that the offense is what the Suns have and what's going to propel them. I'm not really worried about KD and Devin Booker, but it's going to be tough for them to kind of drag it all.
Shout out to Rudy Gobert, man. Defending out in space the way he has in ISO situations. A lot of people were saying that he can't defend in space. I think he's showing you this series that he's actually a very versatile defender, which is why he has multiple defensive players of the year. And I just love to see that big man go out there and sit in a chair and they don't allow you to attack them. I think that just helps your defense so much more when you can say, hey, in this pick and roll, we're going to switch it. Occasionally, just so, you know, it just adds a little different variety to the defense. Sometimes when you always switching and it just makes it predictable, now a guy can get comfortable and he know exactly what's coming. But I will say, shout out to Jaden McDaniels as well for his defense on Devin Booker. I think he did a very good job this game.
Yeah.
Anthony Edwards was phenomenal, though. Anthony Edwards was – he's definitely showing you every playoffs that there's another step to what he could do. And I think he's damn near touching superstar him at this point. He's showing you that he is that guy, especially when you're talking about him going. When he was backpedaling, talking that talk to KD, that's just one of the moments that, like, you just love to see as a fan. Like, you just see him oozing in confidence and that arrogance, and, like, he deserve it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's – I don't know. I would have thought about it – I would have just thought it was interesting if you would have told me that on that game night with Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Anthony Edwards on the floor – Anthony Edwards is going to be the best player on the floor that night. And that's something to see, especially from a young guy that's going at one of the GOATs, one of the greatest when it comes to, like, just of our generation, that he's taking on that challenge. Because you see people either do that or they shy away, but they never really fulfill it and go. He's going at him.
That's why I love
Anthony Edwards. Can't guard me. You can't guard me. Like, I love it.
That's the epitome of basketball. As much as I love that from Anthony Edwards, I love the response from Kevin Durant. He smiled, didn't take it personal, went to the podium, said that's what basketball is about.
Yeah.
Anthony Edwards has always been openly saying Kevin Durant is his favorite basketball player of all time. That's a kid's dream, is to be able to play against somebody you've idolized and go and have a great performance and outplay them in the playoffs with something meaningful on the line. I agree with y'all. And the thing that stands out for me, though, is how bad this roster constructed for Phoenix. Yeah. When you talk about the bench scoring, I think it was 41-4.
Nikhil Alexander Walker and Naz Reid came off the bench for the Timberwolves and gave them a nice little offensive boost.
Being outscored by 37 points on your bench. Yes. And not only did they do that, the duo of Bradley Beal and Devin Booker only outscored the Naz Reid and Nikhil Alexander Walker by three. They combined for 30, and Booker and Beal combined for 33 points. So whenever you get that type of production from your bench, and the bench for Phoenix is non-existent, yeah, I mean, I look at their bench, and I sometimes like chuckle to myself,
because I thought Mike Conley, he didn't look like he looked a little bit lost starting the game, and they put Nikhil in. It was like, okay, that's the depth right there. That's what you need when you're trying to make that deep run. You need sometimes where it's like that guy's he's not playing well right now. We need Nikhil, to get him.
Kyle Anderson, who hurt his hip. Naz Reid, they have options, and I think Phoenix, no matter how this series goes for them, because it's only one game, Kevin Durant can come out and have 40 and they can win, and this can go back to Phoenix 1-1. They're gonna really have to figure this roster out. They don't have enough of those guys who are emphasizing the winning plays. They got a bunch of guys who kind of do the same things and they overlap. Grayson Allen got three shots, 0-for-3, all of them threes. They just gave him $70 million. You're spending $50 million on Bradley Beal. You need to have, like, at this point in KD's career, I don't know if he can play four. I don't know if he can play the four. I think you have to have somebody in there with this team that can mix it up. TJ McConnell being a starting guard for this team, I think they would look a lot different just because of his play style and the energy and the grit that he brings. They don't have enough grit from the others.
Yeah.
Devin Booker and Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant, they're too much of star players to demand them to be the gritty ones.
Yeah. No,
it's always cool when your star player can get a little gritty for you, but to demand it from them on a night-by-night basis, you have to kind of reprogram. I know Bradley Beal got traded and said all of the right things. I want to do this and do all. But he's been programmed for the first decade of his career to not be that guy, because somebody else is going to be paid to do that next to you. Yeah. And then they have some of those guys, but they're not trustworthy offensively to play enough. Josh Okogie is supposed to be that type of player.
I was just about to bring him up because I was like, I thought when he first was initially there, like, he was supposed to be that guy.
Yep.
He can't play really. He can't even play really. And Grayson Allen has been better in this season.
They're going to be like, oh, Josh Okogie on the court? Bet we not.
Yeah, you could damn near just double KD at that point. You just go ahead. And he's a guy that I would say, in order for him to beat us, we're going to let him make 10 threes.
Yes.
He can make the first five threes. I'm still doubling.
Yes.
You literally beat us. Literally.
He's going to have to have 40. Yeah. And then guess what we're going to do next game?
The same thing.
Same thing. Because we're going to see if
you. Boy, you finna add a series of your life. You either finna beat us to get a max contract, or we going to continue to do what we doing, homie. Like seriously. So I just think they have to reprogram this roster and refigure that out, because on paper, going into the season, after the offseason, it looked like they did that. They got Eric Gordon. They brought back Josh Okogie. They got Yuta Watanabe. Then they got Bol Bol. And it was like, okay, the Suns is kind of putting some pieces together. I really love the Royce O'Neal addition. But he's literally the only guy off the bench that can really give you some of what I'm talking about. So tonight is going to be interesting. I think the Timberwolves have to stay locked in. That was a really good, convincing game one. But you have to stay locked in, because you always have to be prepared for a game where your star player doesn't give you 33.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When shots aren't falling, can you still win? If Kevin Durant comes out and said, I ain't losing, I'm going to do anything I got to do for us to win, and he's going for 40 and he got red in his eyes, you have to still withstand that. So I want to see Minnesota continue to be locked in. And I want to see them put the pressure on Phoenix, because if you can go in and win these two games, you send a strong message to Phoenix that you're not some young team that is going to be fooled or bothered by this big three star names that they got. They don't care how many signature shoes y'all got over there. We are a better team.
Yeah.
And if they come out and do that, I think they can really, really take the swing of this series.
I think I'm still going Minnesota in this one, though. In this game, I just think the depth of the Timberwolves, I just think they have too much at that depth spot. But I do think Phoenix probably still go home and probably still win those two games at home.
Speaking of you, who you got, another series we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
The Bucks and the Pacers.
The Bucks and the Pacers, man.
Your man Dame Dollar came out.
He did his work early. Set the tone. But second half wasn't too hot.
So you do your work early.
Yes, exactly. I think he also just helped everybody else just have an easier night. All the attention was on him. So naturally, you just kind of make everything easier for everybody else. I do like his ability to play without Giannis. I would just love to see him
have the same energy.
Put it all together, man. If they could put it all together, this is one of the most dangerous teams in the league. When he plays with Giannis, he's just not the same Damian Lillard. He's so used to having the ball in his hands all the time. And when you're playing with Giannis, obviously your amount of usage just drops significantly because he's going to have the ball. But he just has to find a way to blend his game with another high usage star and still be impactful. But shout out to Chris Middleton. Had a very good game, very, very efficient. Mm-hmm. And I just like the fact that Doc Rivers said that, hey, we're going to test all your three-point shooters. We're going to see if they really like that. And the Pacers shown, they guys, at least in this game, they guys weren't ready for the big moment.
Yeah. I had tweeted out yesterday, too, there's a lot of, like, outdoor shooters. That's your my favorite thing, outdoor shooters. Because, you know, the only problem is they always got to play inside. But, no, I think Obi Toppin was, like, wide open.
Bro, Obi Toppin, he was literally like, we're not guarding Obi Toppin.
One of the reasons I put that was Obi Toppin. I'm like, man, you are so open, my brother. There's so many players in the league that wish they can get the shot too.
Knicks fans was mad when we traded him.
Hey, he was one of my MIP candidates for like what True. He could
you
do.
Did, yeah. He did say he would jump and up I, like 16. I didn't think he was wrong.
And I think that was like you could have bet that on FanDuel. Like that's how the odds were for like he mm-hmm. had actual legit chance. But what I liked from at least the Pacers, because Tyrese, he could have had a way better game, but I think you got to give a lot of credit to Pascal. Pascal, if he doesn't do what he does, this might have been even uglier for the yes. Pacers.
Yeah.
And you kind of, I agree. They have to hit shots, though. You know, I think they got to hit shots. The way the Bucks play the drop coverage and they're giving it up, you have to make them pay.
Yeah, every time Tyrese touched the paint, Brooke Lopez right in front of him.
I want to see that from him. I want to see Tyrese Halliburton be more aggressive.
Yeah.
And I think that was smart by the Milwaukee Bucks. One of the things that Tyrese Halliburton – I'm not saying he's not good at it. Don't get me wrong. But, like, when you think about Tyrese and how he gets his self going or whatnot, it's playing fast, it's involving others, and it's making you have to pay attention to the others, and he'll get his here and there. But he's not like a Damian Lillard who's coming up the court really trying to break you down and go at you. So if you kind of force him to be that, I want to see how he can react to it, and I would love to see him in game two try to look for his shot more. Mm-hmm. He's such a natural pass-first guy that we love, but in a series like this, if they're saying, we're going to give you the pass because we don't believe them to be the players that we think,
yeah,
you have to score. Is he going to be willing to score, and can he at a point with his back against the wall?
He's going
to
have the chance because, like I said, the Bucks' job coverage, everybody knows Brooke Lopez is going to be down there when he's coming off that screen. And he had hit a shot early in the game where it was just right at the elbow. The game the
yes,
shot.
Yes, that mid-range.
And
I
thought, that's it right there.
You it can looked get that. Funky, but it went in, yeah.
You can get that. You can get those threes. As soon as they got to step up way too hard or Brooke Lopez even does something different, you right past him. And another thing I thought, too, that could work for the Patriots' advantage or what they could look for is go to the offensive glass. There's no Giannis out there. Bobby Portis is a good rebounder. Brooke Lopez is not going for that ball.
Them days are all gone.
Brooke Lopez was moving like Joel Embiid when it comes to them rebounds. I seen them flying. Like, I think that's a spot where you can take advantage of, especially with Pascal. Get yourself
Damian
some extra
Lillard
possessions.
Damian Lillard ain't boxing nobody out.
No.
Get yourself Malik Beasley flying down there for a rebound. Go get you one and push the pace. Push the pace. This old team wants to run slow. They don't really like pushing the pace. Go out there and run, even after it makes. And I think you gotta continue to play your game.
They gotta
you
know? Do what they did in the regular season. They were one of the best teams in the league at forcing turnovers. They gotta get out there, force turnovers, and push the break. That's gonna be one way that they could really take advantage of this team.
The only shot that they have is offense. That's what they've done all year. And for them to not crack 100 points and to kind of be,
especially because a Bucks team who isn't defensively that great either. So it doesn't really make sense.
You're not stopping them. You're not stopping them with Giannis. You're not stopping without Giannis. You're going to have to put some points on the board if you want to have a chance. And Tyrese Halliburton, I think, has been the engine for them all year. He has to go out there and continue to be that. I love what we got from Pascal Siakam, though, because like you said, this could be a lot worse without the production he gave you. And I think in game two, Miles Turner can maybe make some more shots. And if Tyrese Halliburton is aggressive matching Damian Lillard, you may have yourself a better chance. I want to give love to Damian Lillard for coming out and kind of setting the tone for himself because the big question was, where does the rim pressure come with Giannis being out? And I think early on, Damian Lillard let it be known to the Pacers, I'm willing to go all the way downhill and score at the rim. Yeah. And then once he did that and he had to pull up three, now when you're coming down at them, whether it's off a miss, whether you're just bringing it up off of a make, you got the defender in the palm of your hands.
Yes.
He get too close, you around him, and you finishing at the rim. He give you that space, Jakob. And bro, now it's just like, what we doing?
One of my favorite shots he took, and this was a miss that he had, is I swear it was a 1-on-5 fast break, and he pulled up from at least 40 feet, 35 feet out. And it was a miss, but I'm like, Dame, this is your Dame. Team right yeah, now. Without no Giannis, this is your team. Shots, that's, yeah. That reminded me of Blazers Dame right there. And I was like, that's the Dame I want to see.
Yeah. I think that's what makes him and Steph so special, is that they are known as like these lethal shooters. But like, if you really think, they are so great at finishing at the rim. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. one of the underrated parts of their games, is that if you do play up, I'm still skilled and strong enough to get to the basket, finish through contact, and you're not going to be able to stop me either way.
That's why I think it's important for guards like that, especially Dame in this series without a Giannis. It's important to emphasize that early on. It's so easy as a guard to fall in love with that three. It's there all the time. You can get it whenever you like. Yes. It takes less energy to do that than to drive through contact and have to finish at the rim constantly. But once you set the tone and you let your opponent know, I'm willing to do that, I'm willing to go all the way, and then they got to respect that. That three just opens up so much. And then once you get in both, so much attention comes to you. Now you can get Pat Connaughton a shot over there, Malik Beasley a shot over here. Now Bobby Portis can do what he did in the second half when you go scoreless in the second half. So definitely continue to build on that. But the scoreless second half makes me feel like the Pacers definitely have a chance at game two. If the Pacers win this, Giannis coming back sooner. This is an injury that he's supposed to be out, 2 to 4 weeks? And now?
Giannis is different, too. I keep saying that. I remember when he got hurt, when he hyperextended his knee or whatever, and he came right back. He a little different.
In the finals. Yeah.
So if they did go down 2, I would expect him to play. Going into game 2, I also wouldn't be surprised if it was like the opposite way around, in terms of like the Pacers kind of blew out the Bucks. Mm. And it was just kind of, I feel like this is a team that's like, they could have variety just because it's all offense, and sometimes offense can turn off.
Some teams could just be really hot, and then you could just see a blowout. And like I said, keep up.
That second half, if they found something there on how to guard Dame and how they want to do what they did to stop him from having another 35-point half, if that could roll over into the second game, the Bucks will be in trouble. Big love to Chris Middleton. I think that's one of my favorite games for Chris Middleton this season, and I think that's going to be important for them in game 2 as well, because you have to expect – Damian Lillard to not have 35. Not that he's going to have a stinker, but just in case he isn't as, on point in the first half, they're going to need somebody else to alleviate that. And I love to see Chris Middleton be aggressive, get in that midi. You know Bobby Portis is going to come with that energy.
They just got to gel it all when Giannis comes back.
Yes. Yeah.
Chris Middleton still has to put on these type of performances with Giannis. Dame still has to do his thing with Giannis. And then let Giannis do his thing. You could have that three-headed monster just working like an engine. The sky's the limit for
maybe
you.
Maybe if they can handle business in the series, that can come back and be a blessing in disguise. Giannis sits out, you're still able to handle business, and during that course of playing without him, you start to get a little bit mojo for the playoffs, and you just insert him. Chris Middleton has found his rhythm, Damian Lillard has found his rhythm, and Giannis, I don't think Giannis needs to find a rhythm.
And
I think
Giannis verbally, come
great, get right to it.
Rhythm for no layup. Come on now.
Giannis has been trying to like get Dame to feel like absolutely this is his team. And like,
but even in the game, that first game, Dame said, we got to come out. We ain't have our best player. Yeah. So he's also aware that this is Giannis' team, and he's the best player on this team.
Even though Giannis has been saying that this is Dame. This is Dame's team and all that.
Dame is real enough to know that that's some bullshit. This is Giannis' team.
Just glad he's not at Coachella right now.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he's just glad he's not at Coachella. Shout out to Dame Lillard. Going back out west, this is a game we've all watched together in Discord. The Pelicans Thunder, baby.
Oh, man.
This game
was such a good game. This was the game of night, because that night we got a bunch of stinkers.
Yes.
And this was the game
that saved us
the whole night, man.
This game unfortunately happened 2 days ago. And the reason I say unfortunate is because the Laker game last night and the Knick finish kind of makes this kind of get to the back fold. This, up until last night, was the game of the playoffs, in my opinion.
It was. And especially when you look at the slate of games that we did have that night.
The Celtics wiped
the floor with their ass. The Bucks was a blowout, too.
Yeah.
Mavericks. The Clippers, the Mavericks
got blown out, too. Mm-hmm. So then it was just like such an underwhelming night. And then for them to come out and put on a show, it was pretty fun.
Was that their Laker game? That was their one to get?
For the Pelicans?
Yeah.
Probably.
I felt more so like the OKC was giving them chance. Like, the Pelicans had a chance to take that, and then OKC was giving them all the chances in the world. But OKC kind of found a way. Like, I feel like they have a fresh breath after they got that first win.
I feel the opposite. I feel like the Pelicans gave the Thunder this game. I feel like the Pelicans came out and defended really well, and they answered every single time that the Thunder tried to put them away and go on a little home court advantage type thing. You'll have somebody, Isaiah Joe hit a big three, I remember. And then you have somebody like Trey Murphy come back and hit a three. You had Larry Nance really working. You had Val going at Chet. Brandon Ingram didn't have the best game, but the shots he did make was like, damn, he hit that fadeaway mid-range being guarded by Dirt like that? You had Alvarado trying to make some plays. CJ was making plays. They had a team effort that matched the defense, and there was possessions down the stretch that you go to and you look at as a team and as a coach and you say, bro, this is going to keep me up tonight. The Larry Nance 2K missed dunk.
Yes.
The Larry Nance outlet to Trey Murphy out of bounds. The panics that they kind of had there, I really felt like opened that door and it kept that game close enough. They had a lot of chances to make this game a two-game possession or a three-game possession, and they fumbled and fumbled and fumbled. You cannot do that with a Pelican. I mean, with a Thunder team that's the number one seed with an MVP candidate.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like Shea had the and one. Then before that, he had that big mid-range shot. You cannot give that many opportunities to a one. They're a one seed for real. I know they're young. Their coach is young, but they are a legitimate one seed. They did not luck up and get this opportunity. They went and earned it. So when you play that well, you have to capitalize. And it just feels like that's what stands out to me so much is that last stretch where they just. Man, they missed out on so many opportunities to give themselves a little bit of a breathing room. There was times where it was like 90 to 92 or 88 to 86, and they could take a four-point lead. And if you take that four-point lead, you maybe can get a six-point lead because the Thunder were just missing and having turnovers. Shea threw it out of bounds. Shea lost the ball, and they did not take advantage how I think you have to on the road as a lower seed. And to me, that kept the door open for the Thunder. And the Thunder – they're going to capitalize, bro.
They are. And you want to know something? And I kind of wanted to bring it up, how many young players are in the playoffs and they're actually playing like big roles. Cason Wallace, there's a lot of rookies that don't play like no rookie. Cason Wallace is one of them.
That closing possession for the Cason
Wallace is one of them.
Him and getting the switch, and then CJ ended
do
up.
Do they not watch basketball?
Do they
not know who he is because he's a rookie?
I don't know.
I guess they figured, hey, he's young. Let's just try.
If it's one thing that he was going to excel at as a rookie. It was
defense.
Yes.
But I will say this for the Thunder's sake. I am a little worried a little bit because when you're talking about them having a double team Val and treat him like he's Joel or Jokic, that's a little concerning because I know Valanciunas is good. He's all right. But it's weird seeing him demand a double team every time he touches the ball. They are sending two bodies at him. That just messes up your whole defense. And now it does leave you vulnerable to Trey Murphy 3, CJ attacking closeouts, and Brandon. Like, you just put yourself at such a disadvantage when you know Chet can't defend a guy like Valanciunas one-on-one. Because that's going to just mess up your defense a lot, bro.
I'm really interested to see how this game two goes. It can go a lot of different ways. The Pelicans can keep fighting, and we can realize this series is a lot closer than we think.
Yeah.
Or OKC comes out and crushes them and takes away every momentum and spirit that they have to have some confidence. They can strip that away. Brandon Ingle can have a game. There's so many different variables that can happen in this series. Lou Dort really did his thing.
I really wanted to give a shout-out to Lou Dort.
Yes.
His defense on Brandon Ingram, I think – when you talk about underrated defenders, I don't think Lou Dort gets the praise that he deserves because I think he really does go out there and he lays his hat on the defensive side of the ball.
Yes,
he don't care if his three-point shot is falling or not. Some defenders, like, you know, they could be having an off night offensively, but then the defense, you could definitely see it wavers. Him, he is hard-nosed. I'm laying my hat on his defensive side of the ball.
Got to respect him there.
And he's not afraid of it. He's not afraid of it either. He wants to guard the other team's best
player. I love it because
when you as strong as him – I feel like you just know, like, he don't want to bump. He don't want to mess with me.
Yeah.
I'm always like a fire hydrant with defenders like that when they give up the tough shot. Because some of the shots, and again, Brandon Ingram struggled, but some of the shots he did hit, those are the ones that sometimes you see a defender just be like, bro, what can I do? Lou Dort ain't tripping off that.
Bro, I love that too. You know who does it? I swear, Alex Caruso does that too. Like, he knows he going to give up some tough ones. He just run back. Yeah. He don't ever put his head down or nothing.
It's the
he
NBA.
Just,
guys going to make tough shots.
For sure.
Especially guys like Brandon Ingram.
For make real. 10 of them.
Yes. And now you done made 2 of 10. I done did my job.
But
you got 2 highlights, but that's fine. My job was done.
Going forward tonight? No, is that tonight or tomorrow that they play?
Oh, let's see.
Because some of those games are going on Wednesday. I can't remember which one.
We is Timberwolves, Suns, 6:30. Bucks, Pacers, and then also the night game is Clippers, Mavericks.
Yeah, on the weekdays, we're only going to get 3 games. Where on the weekends, we might get 4 or 5.
So the Pelicans are tomorrow.
The Pelicans play tomorrow. There's two games tomorrow.
Yeah, Pelicans play tomorrow.
Oh, two games tomorrow?
Good. So we'll get this game tomorrow.
I love the two-game nights.
Thunder handle business, right? To go up
2-0? I think so. I think so.
But I think the Pelicans got a really good chance at going home and winning those games. That first game convinces me that the Pelicans are really in this, and they think they can win this. They might feel like they can steal game two still. I don't think they feel that
no,
way.
No, for sure. They should feel like they can steal game two. You go in there and you say, hey, we got to get a better performance from Brandon Ingram. We got to clean up some of those panics we had down the stretch.
That pass to Trey Murphy is just—it's like engraved
Trey Murphy
in my
was
mind.
Blue that he threw that pass.
Yes, he literally just threw him the ball. Brandon Ingram was right there.
That and that missed dunk, man. That missed dunk.
Because Shea had a few bad plays down the game too. Down the stretch, where like it was like, okay,
they're turning the ball over.
Yeah.
Last series. I will let y'all have it. The Celtics in the Heat.
Bro.
It's just too much talent.
I'm right behind Kendrick Perkins. It's a level to this, bro. It's a level to this. Honestly, the Celtics look like they just kind of, I don't even think they literally going hard. And they've been hitting on all cylinders. I mean, Jason Tatum has been, the first game, he didn't even shoot amazing. But the rest of the team kind of just carried. Like, Kristaps was really good. Derek White was really good. I feel like everybody contributing. It's what they've been doing all season long. Like, that's what you want to see, honestly, though. Yeah. You don't want to see no switch.
Tyler Hero's he's seeing a lot of great defenders on him at a consistent basis. He's not used to being that number one guy at this rate without Jimmy next to him. It's going to be tough for him. They're going to make it hard for him. They're pretty much going to be like anybody but him.
Anyone but him.
And they know the rest of them. They not really own
but
shit.
But, again, it's a lot of rookies in here that's not playing like rookies. Shout out to Jaime. Jovic is not a rookie, but.
Young guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely been hooping, especially on the defensive side. I know it's a tough series for them, but it's good to see them get this, like, you know, a little bit of shine.
Now, you know what I'm going to say?
Yeah.
Take the regular season series next year.
Now you won't be facing the number one seed.
The number one seed. Now, I want to give credit to Boston, too, because Boston came out and they are playing like the best team in the NBA, the mm-hmm. most dominant team, the number one seed.
They're not
complacent. They ain't waste no time. Yeah. They came out, what was that, a quick 9-0 run to start the game. Jaylen Brown came out aggressive, Tatum doing his thing. Derek White had a dub, I believe. Kristaps was aggressive. Like Mike said, clicking on all cylinders, I think that's very important when you're playing against a team that you're way better than and you have all this confidence in. I think you have to come out and try to get everybody going and be dominant. Show yourself early in the playoffs as much as you can that we are who we think we are. We are the favorite to win a championship. We are the best team in the NBA. We are head and shoulders above all of the competition. I think it's extremely important to show that. And I think that's one of the things that was really tough to see in the first game for the Thunder.
Yeah.
I think for them to be such a young team, it would have been really good for them internally to come out and have a dominant opening game to the playoffs to reassure themselves that we are who we think we are. Mm-hmm. But when you have all of the chatter about how much the youth is going to affect them, if they really are the favorite, can they really go on the run? When you hear all of that and the play starts to match it early on in the playoffs – they're human. We all are human. You know what I mean? You think about that, it festers in there, and you start to have some questions and some doubt and different things like that. So I want to tip my hat off to Boston. I think it is important for top seeds to come out and solidify themselves to be who they think they are. And we won't have too much to talk about in this series, I don't think.
No.
But it won't be because Boston ain't doing the things right. You know what I mean? It's just because a lot of these other series are going to be closer, and it's tough to really analyze dominance.
Yeah.
And so I got to say that and give credit to Boston like that, because as a team, as a guy who's a fan of a team as a two seed, I would love to just be able to crush the 76ers, but they're not the typical seven seed, and we're not the typical two seed. So, you know, it's definitely different in that case, but Boston has been head and shoulders above everybody the entire season. The entire season, they have just ran through the course. And they've had a little bit of disrespect on their name. People questioning if Jason Tatum should be first team All-NBA was a joke to me. You know what I mean? All everybody talk about is if Boston loses, what does it mean to Tatum's legacy as if he's in his 18th year? Yeah. You know what I mean? it's just a lot going on.
I hate the legacy talk.
Man, for the young guys, man, yeah, for real.
It don't make sense.
Him and Luka, we should not be talking about
legacy. Why do we put that pressure on them when a lot of guys don't win a championship until they're like 28 or 29?
We're such in a fast food world where everything needs to have instant gratification.
If
we talking
come
about
in good, they expect you to like go on this miraculous run immediately.
Yeah, and like you said, a lot when you look at the history of the greats who have the rings, Not too many of them are like Kobe, who was getting them at that young age. Yes. Jordan and LeBron and all those guys, it took a while. So I don't understand it, Derek, but that's just the reality we in with social media. We are in a generation where an album comes out, and that night people are dropping reviews.
That one day reviews. Literally.
I don't understand.
Bro, and gave the songs a chance to grow on you. The songs that artists took 4 months to make that got metaphorical hidden gems, you ain't even understood them yet. You ain't trying to give no time to let the music fester and, you know, replay value, all things that exist. No, here's a review in one listen in one day. I got a review on this complex album that Kendrick Lamar dropped.
That he took 4 years to make.
Yeah, and I soaked it up and understood everything from the get-go out of one listen. It's like we just live in a time right now where everything is so instant. A rookie comes in and has a tough first month of the season, he's a bust. A coach should be fired in the first year. You know what I mean? Like, just insane.
I hate when teams...
And sometimes, again, some coaches should be fired in the first year, but it's just so quick. The first thing is to say, man, we need this.
I understand rookies can come in and they could be Luka or they could be whoever. Rookies are not ideally supposed to be good their first couple of years.
Especially like,
it's supposed to be a time. Yeah. How could you transition from a point guard out of college to the NBA just flawlessly? It's just almost no way.
And there's no off
night. It's no way.
No, it's not one off night.
Mm-hmm. You can wake up. Okay. Monday you playing Steph.
Next day you playing Trae Young.
Luka.
Yeah, Luka.
And then you have an off night to rest, and then you come back and play Trae Young. Then
on off night, night that may be considered an off night, you're going against Cade Cunningham. Cade Cunningham will still go out there and give you the business.
Fred VanVleet will give you 30 if you ain't coming to play.
Then you got
to
come, you come out and you play Pat Beverly, and he trying to check you out.
Right, like
he want to show that he can lock up
your
rookie.
Dad talking too much.
You got 6'7" LaMelo Ball,
right?
And you 6'2".
Those are non all stars. The non stars are those guys. Jamal Murray is a non all star guard. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
That's supposed to be a calm night for you, Jamal Murray. Okay. So yeah, we really gotta just relax and chill. Everything don't have to be so. But again, that's just the era that we live in with social media. And I think KB said it last episode. We're probably just growing out of the social media era, like that. We're just outgrowing it, seriously, because everything.
I don't think social media is a real place. I've learned that as an adult.
Well, you know that's my trademark.
Yeah.
The internet isn't real, man. The internet isn't real. The internet is not real, bro. It's just really not. That's all we really have. I was going to go over some of the stuff that they were saying about, like, the most overrated player, overrated coach. They was talking about players wouldn't want to play for Thibodeau or whatever. But it's already 12:30. I got to give us some time to be able to go check ourselves out on TV. I ain't going to lie.
Facts.
I just got a DM from my boy, Huge Gaz. He said, ready for that premiere, bro. You know he got that name from.
Come out in 30 minutes, man. We finna get out. Hey, we got to go watch it.
Before we leave, though, status alert. Kawhi Leonard knee present at shoot around Tuesday.
Okay.
So keep an eye on that. But no, we appreciate y'all for all of the support, all of the love. Know y'all watching this right now and probably have already seen us on TV. We probably at home as you watch this, sharing the retweets. Much love. Safe travels to our boy KB to come back home. Did his thing at First Take, held it down for the boys. It's only up for him, man. We love y'all. We'll see y'all Saturday with more playoff basketball talk. We out.
We out.
Peace.